Hi, and welcome to another thrilling instalment of Security Nation, a podcast where we talk to people who are tackling challenges to help advance security in some way. I'm your host, Jen Ellis. I'm Rapid7's VP of Community and Public Affairs. And with me, as ever, is my amazing co-pilot, Mr. Todd Beardsley. Hey, Todd, how you doing?
Ahoy, ahoy. I'm doing great.
Todd, this is the first one of these things I've recorded not in Rapid7's headquarters. And in fact, I am sitting in the UK where it is pouring with rain, as if that wasn't a cliche. How's Austin? Is it incredibly hot?
It is ridiculously hot. I did not leave the house at all this last weekend. Too hot. Too hot to leave. It's like living on the surface of Mercury.
I'm glad we're all living up to our cliches. All right, great. So before we get into this week's exciting interview, I think that you're going to take me through what's hot in the news, right? In our rapid rundown. I feel like we should have sound effects for rapid rundown.
Rapid rundown.
Oh my God, that was golden.
You like that one?
Let's keep that forever.
Cut, print forever. All right. So I think the biggest news lately was the Facebook leak of about 419 million phone numbers that are also incidentally linked with Facebook user IDs. There is a fairly significant privacy component to this, and that is a component that we won't really be talking about too much in this rapid rundown, because mainly we focus more on security than privacy. But the problem here that a lot of security people are talking about is once these phone numbers are both linked with a Facebook ID, which then can go to a person's name and email address and all that jazz, it gets a lot easier to conduct a SIM swapping attack. And if you don't know what a SIM swapping attack is,
which I don't,
well, I will tell you, and I will give you resources to learn more. Oh. But basically, what a SIM swapping attack is when an attacker convinces your phone carrier to port your number to a SIM card that they control in their phone. So basically, they start getting all your texts and phone calls. This is a problem when we deal with phone numbers and cell phones in particular as security tokens. We treat them as kind of secret, sort of, as a way to establish identity, which is not really what phone numbers are really good for. And so, you know, I think it becomes obvious, right? Like if I have a password reset procedure that says, okay, well, I'm going to text you a special code and then type that in and then you get to change your password. Well, the bad guy controls your phone number. This all falls apart. And then I guess the tragedy of all of it is that it doesn't super matter like what you do as a user security wise. You could keep your phone number super secret, but then as soon as it's revealed, then an attacker can A, already know your phone number. You don't really get to change your phone number. Nobody changes their phone number anymore since 2004 when phone numbers became portable. This is why everyone has area codes that don't often have anything to do with where they live. So that's essentially the problem here, right? Is that when your phone number is a identity token and you can't change it and you cannot secure it, bad things happen.
Yeah. Okay. So like that was a lot. That was a mouthful. Thank right. you.
And let me just throw out, if you want to know more about this, Reply All, which is a wonderful podcast that you should listen to right after this one. Episode number 130, The Snapchat Thief, goes into this in great detail of like how SIM swapping actually happens. So check that out.
Oh, I like this. I like this, you know, encouraging people to listen to other podcasts. It's nice.
Yep. Yeah. Right after this one.
Right. Okay, cool. So like... firstly, these attackers, they are some cheeky people. But so like, it sounds like there's not really much that people can do to protect themselves from this.
Well, so the standard advice is stop using your real phone number for this sort of like identity verification thing, for texts, for SMS-based two-factor authentication, for anything like that, for this kind of security control.
Sure, that would limit the harm, but it wouldn't actually protect you from the attack, right?
Well, it helps because... So when I say stop using your real phone number, I mean start using a different phone number. So what a lot of people use is like Google Voice. There's a couple other providers out there, but Google Voice is probably the most known and popular one, where you can get a phone number and link it to like an email address and start using that as, you know, the thing that you get your texts for resetting passwords on. It's very similar to like how password management is like kind of a giant hassle to set up initially, but then once you do it, it's like it's done and you don't really have to worry about it anymore. Right. Having a alternate phone number just for this security stuff is a way to avoid getting it, because like a Google Voice phone number cannot be SIM swapped. That is an important thing because it's not not T-Mobile, it's not AT&T, it's not, you know, it's not on
it's not a
air quote real carrier. Yeah, it's not a cell phone number, and so that protects you from the SIM swap attack in itself. But as far as like obviously the privacy concerns of like having your phone number out in the world, like I don't know. I mean, people don't really treat their phone numbers as very secret, except for when they do. So it's like in a weird kind of nebulous privacy zone. But yeah, protecting yourself from SIM swapping attack does kind of necessarily mean that you have a phone number that you don't tell people, but you do tell security providers. It's not great, right?
Yeah. Like, and I mean, you can see why consumers like have a real sort of like eye roll over the security thing.
It's a huge eye roll. Like I'm rolling my eyes right now thinking about how awful this is.
Yeah, it's exhausting for them. I can totally get it. And at the same time, like I'm guessing that we're also saying, but hey kids, like still two-factor authentication is still important, even if it's text-based. So like we're kind of giving mixed signals here, people.
Text-based 2FA is marginally better than nothing. You know, much better are like a token or something called TOTP, where it's like an app that runs on your phone or whatever.
Sure, but your average consumer isn't getting offered that in most cases, right? Unless it's for their bank or their workplace.
Well, it's kind of Wild West. Like I know there are plenty of banks that do text-based 2FA.
Yeah. So. Well, that's let's not get into a conversation about how behind the US is on internet banking.
Right.
Okay. So.
So SIM swapping. Don't do it.
No SIM swapping. And use Google Voice for your phone.
Yep.
So what else is happening in the world? Anything else we should cover?
So this podcast is also Blue Keep Watch, like the official Blue Keep Watch podcast. And so just as an update in that whole thing, so Blue Keep is the RDP-based exploit. It's CVE 2019-0708.
You're so proud of knowing that.
I know. It's the only one I know. and it was an RDP bug. It was announced by Microsoft back in May with a patch. We've had a few months to patch it. And as of now, there is a Metasploit module lurking in the pull queue on GitHub. So it is technically public. It's not released as part of Metasploit, which has been widely reported. That is not true. But it has been published in the form of a pull request, which is a working proof of concept exploit for Bluekeep. So this is significant because it's the first one-ish that has been public-ish.
Right.
Go take a look at the pull request and you will find out that it is not terribly stable yet, but it does work in a lab environment. But there has been it's been 3 days since it's been out there, and there are 146 comments. Most of them are I can't get it to work,
but nonetheless the point is that if you work on an assumption that the Metasploit framework is your security program must be this high to write kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That it's the baseline of what your security program needs to be able to protect against, then the point here is if you have not patched, then you need to patch as quickly as possible. That's really what we're getting at with this one, right?
And you have to know what there is to patch. So it's like a kind of a two-prong. This is what vulnerability management is all about. It is asset management and patch management. So you have to know that, you know, you have RDP exposed somewhere. It could be internal or external. Find those endpoints, patch those endpoints, or turn them off. Like maybe you don't need RDP anymore. You know, a lot of times people set up RDP once and then forget about it. So yeah, so we are marching along the path of exploitation technology is catching up with this vulnerability. So I think that we're in an okay position. I am happy that we're able to adequately test defenses now that we have this kind of sort of working Metasploit module. Once that lands, it'll get a lot easier to test things because it will, you know, work on more targets. Right now it works like on 3 targets and you have like a really good shot of blue screening yourself if you try it. So not great for a worm, obviously. Like worms shouldn't be crashing things. And because if they do, like, it's just like, you know, it's viruses that kill you too fast, right? Like they don't get the threat.
Right. Yes. There's not much mystique about whether or not you got hit. Then you're like, I definitely something's up.
But if you'd like to help, you know, we're always looking for community help. It is pull request number 12283.
Cool. Well, okay. Thank you. And is there anything else that you wanted to tell us about? Or is that
That's it.
We have rapidly run down. Perfect. Yep. I certainly feel run down.
Patch your RDP and change your SMS-based authentication to a non-cell phone carrier phone number.
Or alternatively, consider moving into a charming cave and abandoning all technology. Either is good. Probably won't be listening to podcasts if you go for the latter.
Probably not.
All right. Thanks, Todd. That was great. Let's welcome this week's special guests. So for this episode, Todd and I are joined by Richard Kaufman, who is the Information Security Officer at Amedisys, a national provider of home health, hospice, and personal care. Richard is celebrating his 1 year anniversary of being at Amedisys tomorrow. I'm hoping there's cake, and I'm hoping that we'll be invited around for some. But as yet, I've heard nothing, so we'll see what happens. Richard, welcome. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into the project that you're going to talk to us about, let's find out a little bit more about you. What I love is that you sent us over a bio so that we can find out a little bit more about you. And the last lines of your bio are, my daughter is my biggest fan. I enjoy long walks with heavy backpacks. And that inner voice inside my head sounds just like David Goggins, which made me chuckle no end.
Completely accurate. And to be fair, my daughter's only three. So her list of people to be a fan of is pretty short, but I'm glad to see that I'm on the top of that list.
I feel like somehow it's so much better when they're that age because they're just so much happier about showing it as well.
Completely agree.
That's a great age. But I enjoy long walks with heavy backpacks. It did make me wonder what your cybersecurity dating profile would look like.
That's right. So unsuccessful, mostly. I always like to lead it off with hacker, father, questionable decision enthusiast. I think that kind of accurately describes everything about me.
I like it. That's pretty good. Anything else that would be in your profile?
Just a bunch of terrible headshots.
Is there such a thing as a good headshot?
That's right.
Not in the corporate world. So then this is a question I like asking people. What is your secret superpower? As we've discussed before, mine is the ability to harness awkwardness and make any situation more awkward.
Yeah, I think mine would go. I go back to like just complete mediocrity. I'm that superhero that is just, I'm okay at a bunch of different stuff.
I think that's kind of great. As somebody who feels like they're not really okay at anything, I would take that. Like, mediocrity sounds great right now.
Yeah. It's like you need a big data exercise and be like, wow, who's this guy who's placing it in the middle of the pack of all the things?
Oh, I like the fact that you managed to weave big data into this. Well played. Todd, have you ever answered this question or do you always evade it?
My power is evading questions like this.
Yeah, answering questions you don't want to answer. Oh, correct. Trust me, I'm aware. all right. And so if you weren't doing this, and by this I mean your job, not this podcast, because why wouldn't you want to do this? What would you be doing?
That's a great question. So up until I was 15 years old, I wanted to be a paleontologist, which I know that there's a very natural progression between paleontology and cybersecurity.
Of course.
But basically, I was in high school then, getting ready for, playing the rest of my life at college. And I met with my guidance counselor and I was like, hey, I want to be a paleontologist. And then I found out how much paleontologists made, not to, disrespect all the paleontologists listening to this podcast.
So many paleontologists listen to this podcast, yes.
Well, now that we've said the word like five times, it's going to shoot to the top of recommended podcast.
But the funny part about that is it's one of my favorite slides to put up around budgeting season to marry those two worlds, because Jurassic Park was not a story about dinosaurs, right?
Nope.
It's a story about what happens when you pay your IT employees too little.
I like it. I like that point of view. I also appreciate, like, recently I feel like I've been in lots of discussions where we've been talking about all the films that you could consider hacker films that aren't really hacker films. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? Jurassic Park, top of the list.
Right. Absolutely. I like this. I endorse this message. Okay, good. Perfect. So this is not why you joined us, even though I feel like we could actually quite happily talk nonsense all afternoon. But the reason you came on is to talk about Amedisys Right Care. So this is a project that you guys have been involved in. Can you tell us a little bit about what the project is, what it entails?
Yeah, absolutely. So Amedisys RightCare is kind of a philosophy that our CEO, Paul Cousereau, has done just a fantastic job of ushering in over the past couple of years. At the core of Amedisys RightCare, it's about providing the right type of care at the right place at the right time in order to improve the quality of life for our patients and clients. So we talk a lot in the hospice, home health, and personal care industry about aging in place. And that's kind of a very simplistic view on an extremely complex problem. I think at the core of that, no one likes going to hospitals, right? Hospitals are cold, the beds aren't comfortable. You lose a piece of yourself when you go to the hospital, right? So what we want to be able to do is empower our patients to remain in their home and set goals for their own care, which we believe provides that better quality of life at the end of it. That's kind of like that strategic vision at the CEO level. So how we start breaking that down tactically and the impact that that has on technology. Technology plays a big part of that, right? IoT, networks inside of homes, it gets really complex very, very quickly. So we started about a year and a half ago, this concept of our own digital transformation project, which lots of companies are doing digital transformation these days. But I think what makes Amedisys different is our CIO, Mike North, had this great idea of taking a more holistic approach into the capabilities that IT offers. And at the core of that is information security. So we understand that patient privacy and protecting our most vulnerable people was integral into this RightCare philosophy. So we've been establishing the security team. We've been very strong, but ever since I came on board a year ago, we've kind of been bolstering those defenses and capabilities to support the mission of improving the quality of life for our patients.
Awesome. So it sounds like you've got some pretty lofty goals there when you're talking about, you know, improving quality of life for patients and trying to give people the opportunity to receive healthcare in their home and to do so securely. It's great. So can you tell us a little bit more about like the sort of substance and detail of what you've been doing from the cybersecurity point of view?
Yeah, absolutely. So we kind of break down, I call it an asymmetric security posture. And that's just a kind of a head nod to the fact that a lot of adversaries in this space can invest very little time, very little resources, and have just a detrimental impact on an organization. You know, we see it on the large-scale breaches, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later on. But it is one of those things where we invest a lot of time, money, and resources into protecting those patients' data. And we just want to make sure that we're getting the right return on investment at the end of the day. When I stepped into the role a year ago, regardless of the cake situation, I kind of focus on data, right? Data is why I'm here. Patient data is incredibly, I think, valuable to adversaries these days. We see them acting in that space. But fundamentally, what do you need in order to access that data? You need a username and a password, so an identity. You need some sort of device, whether that's a tablet, mobile, laptop, server, you name it. And you also need some sort of connectivity, so a network. And those are the three areas that we've been focusing on over the past year, is identity defense, device defense, and network defense. And kind of when you break it down into those granular approaches, all of a sudden, that elephant, right? How do you eat that elephant? Those single bite-sized kind of tactical wins become much more, I think, easier to realize.
I'm still dwelling on eating elephants, but okay. let us start pouring in from vegans across the world. Who also, them and the paleontologists go crazy for this podcast. Okay, so that sounds like a very pragmatic approach. I like it.
Yeah, maybe we add that to the superpowers list. Mediocre pragmatist.
I feel like pragmatism does come off as mediocre, but in actual fact, it is a superpower because it generally is a better path forward to effectiveness. So yay for pragmatism.
And it's so interesting, you know, as I was sitting there talking with the team that was interviewing me, and they're like, tell us your approach for vulnerability management. And I was like, sure thing, no problem. Be happy to jump into it for you. But before I do, tell me more about your ITIL-based approach to configuration management. And, you know, you kind of get the blank stares, and it's like, guys, like, let me save you some time and money. You have vulnerabilities.
Right.
We've got to develop a patching plan. And it's not just about identifying them. It's about what you do with them afterwards.
And then they were like, we'd like to offer you a job.
That's right.
And a year later, we're waiting for cake.
They were like, what's your favorite dinosaur hacker movie?
He said, funny you should ask. All right. So how did you get going with this? Like, what were the things that you did to implement in your three bite-sized elephant areas?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, it's kind of just the first thing you do, you sit down and kind of do that assessment of the operating area. Where were the quickest wins? We found some quick wins with vulnerability management, with quite frankly, our SIM had some opportunities for improvement. We gained a lot of visibility. Rapids haven't played a big part in providing that visibility into our organization. And we kind of grew it from there.
Oh my God, that's so great. We didn't even pay you to say that. Thanks.
That's right. And kind of that implementation of some of the Rapid7 products, as well as a few of the others that we brought in. You know, it's easy to forget sometimes that we're still a business. You know, and if you get too heads down in the security focus, you start losing that line of sight to the quality of care of our patients. And that's one thing that even within my first couple of months here, we started correcting. So it's kind of like, hey guys, we're getting a little too focused in our own world. Let's make sure that the decisions that we're making have the right impacts to our clinicians and ultimately to our patients and clients.
I love that. I love the push to make it relevant and to keep your eyes on the real goal and what's really at stake. I think it's so easy, as you said, to lose sight of those pieces when you get into the detail work and to become like a little bit myopic.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's kind of one of the things that actually brought me to Amedisys. I have a little bit of a personal connection to our mission. And it started for me about 6 years ago here in Baton Rouge. I obviously wasn't working for Amedisys yet. But I was working in healthcare, and I was furniture shopping. I bought my first house, and it was time to kind of move on past all this college furniture I've been schlepping around the past 2 years. And I was furniture shopping, and my phone called, and it was my dad had called me. And my dad and I had one of those relationships, you know, where you don't talk all the time. You know, it was every 2 weeks, every other week, you know, touch base, hey, how you doing? Things are good. I'll see you when I see you. And I talked to him, and you could tell, like, something was wrong. So I walked out the store, had a discussion with him. And, you know, he had been diagnosed with colon cancer. And I was like, okay, you know, talk to me about the steps again, that pragmatic approach that I have on things. You know, tell me about the process, tell me about the steps. And he started explaining to me. I was like, okay, no big deal. I went home like everybody does, and they do their research. And I found him. I was like, you know what, he's going to be just fine. No big deal. And there's 7 days that passed between when he called me and his procedure. He had some polyps, right? So we're going to remove the polyps, and then he'll be good to go and go home. So the 7 days passed, and they opened him up and come to find out that he had cancer everywhere. It wasn't just in his colon, but he had it throughout his entire body.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And not to get too heavy and deep on this Monday morning taping of the podcast, but that's what it was, you know, that conversation that I had with him on that Friday, you know, that was the last conversation that we had while he was lucid. And he went, you know, down this spiral after his procedure and went, you know, he went very, very quickly. And the thing that was so interesting to me about it, I mean, I guess interesting, I'm not forever, but interesting to me about it, you know, 23 days later, he passed away. And we all had our chance to say goodbyes, and it was sweet. But the thing that stuck with me about the entire situation was we all had our chances to say goodbyes. And I was in a different city. My siblings were in different cities. At the time that he passed, his wife was in another room. And the person that was with him was his hospice nurse. And, I mean, obviously, I'm talking about it with you guys on a podcast, right, 7 years later. That's a pretty critical moment in anybody's life when they lose a loved one.
Yep.
But one of the things that sticks with me is that hospice nurse, like, that was Thursday for that person, you know?
Yeah.
That was just a weekday. That's their job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it just, I take a lot of pride in the fact that the security posture that my team implements has a direct impact on the quality of that person's life.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, I've worked in a lot of healthcare organizations where, you know, things are a little strict on the security side of the house.
Right.
And I would just hate it if that person had that experience, went home and wanted to do something as simple as send an email or connect with one of their peers, or even just write up their notes so they can start fresh the new day, and they weren't able to because of a security control. You know, we all know security is one of those things that works best when it's not seen. It just works, just like technology in general. And that's one of the things that as we've been performing this work over the past year, my team doesn't lose sight of on a daily basis, because I'm certainly going to remind them if I feel like they are.
Wow. So Richard, thank you for sharing that. That's really a really humbling, I think, and a moving story. And I think when you find a thing that becomes your calling, your mission, you feel personally connected to what you're doing. It is a super empowering, but also it can be that much more stressful because you care about it so much more.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the things that kind of differentiates Amedisys from the rest of the group, honestly, is we run a very lean ship in IT and across the organization, but the people who are here, they care tremendously, and none of us are trying to just do the status quo. We're making things better in whatever, lens that looks like.
Then you're lucky, because having the chance to work with people who all really feel personally about a mission is a really amazing thing. I feel very fortunate that I get that at Rapid7. And I'm always mindful of the fact that not everybody has that where they work. So it sounds like you do. It's just pretty sad that you had to get there in a not so lucky way.
Well, that's the thing, right? Everybody's experiences in life kind of shapes them. And if I hadn't had that experience, then who knows how I would have approached this? And it probably wouldn't have been the most correct approach for our patients. But again, at the end of the day, that's what's important.
Well, I feel very sort of humbled and inspired by you, Richard, honestly. This is meant to be a funny podcast, damn it. I am not being funny right now.
We can switch gears and go back to the funny.
I don't know, Todd, have you got anything that you want to ask?
You know what? I kind of do. I don't know, maybe bring it to a little more specific on security stuff. I know in medical tech in general, one of the biggest problems that they have, aside from patch management, is what you say, this credential issue. Usernames and passwords for things. And when you're dealing with a medical, issue, especially emergencies, you don't want to be screwing around with logging into stuff. And so this is usually why med tech tends to have kind of a bad reputation when it comes to authentication and encryption, because when that fails, you don't get to do the thing, which may be a life-saving or life-improving kind of procedure at the moment. So I'm kind of curious, how you... have you ever run into a situation where you have some med tech IoT thing that is lacking any sort of reasonable credentialing, and how you approach that, and how you are enabling someone to do their job, but also at least wrapping security around it? Do you have anything that you can talk to?
I love that question. So you're right. There's lots of opportunities in this space. We've been recently going through an entire, I would say, modernization around how we manage identities in our entire workforce here at Amedisys, quite frankly. And it's really interesting, because as we sit through, I'm fortunate enough, I have the risk management function under my purview here as well, which makes things super easy. And one of the things that I think we tend to lose sight of is when we see a gap, it's easy to point out the gap, but it's really difficult to point out all of the compensating controls that probably reduces that risk to a more acceptable level. And I'm not saying that you don't do anything about it. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, there's very rarely, I think defense in depth as a concept over the past 10 years has been wonderful. We just have to understand that, okay, you're right. If I have a gap on the authentication into this one thing during this specific scenario, I just now have more of a reliance on my other controls in that time frame than I do otherwise. And that's one of the things that we're always kind of working on is, okay, just because it's a gap doesn't mean we're not doing anything about it. We just need to do a better job of documenting all of the other things that are being done in this space. And this is where I think, you know, not to kind of get into the market, like the AI opportunity, but when we get into things like automation and all of that good stuff, that's where I see a lot of that playing is under these specific events, if this doesn't occur, go do these other things. So that's kind of where what we're doing right now. And we're just in its infancy, to be honest with you.
So, you know, one of the things that we sort of ask as people talk about projects is, you know, how's it been going? Like, what's working and what's not? It sounds like a lot of stuff is working, that you've figured out how to make progress and make it practical. What are some of the challenges you faced as you've gone through all of this?
Yeah, I tell you what, the first vendor that comes in here and figures out how to sell me 12 more hours in the day, sign me up for the 3-year deal on that one.
Can I interest you in perhaps some cloning instead?
That's right. Yeah, that would be perfect. No, I think you know, for opportunities, that's the thing that is hard for us. It really does comes down to blood and treasure, right? Where do I put my people? Where do I put my money to have the largest impact, greatest success in improving patient quality of care? We are in a highly regulated industry, and that certainly adds its own layer of complexity. So as you kind of have your 3-year plan, you don't always know what the next regulation is going to come in and do. And we're in a little bit of that situation right now where there's new regulations on the horizon. We're figuring out how to pivot. What do we work on? You know, what is truly the priority versus what can wait a few months? And so, I mean, in my role, it's really more about just aligning the resources and the technology to the problems.
So what would you, like, with all of that in mind, what would your, you know, piece of advice be to somebody who wanted to tackle a transformation project?
The first thing that I would say you do is you go out and you hire the best people that you can find. And we've managed to do that here at Amedisys. We've grown our security team quite a bit over the past year. And that's the thing for me is all of those employees of mine, I call them carnivores all the time. They're just straight meat eaters.
Yep.
And they just come in day after day, and they understand the vision, not just at my level, but at the company level. And they know how they fit into that wheel, right? And so as you have that unit that understands, hey, we're all going this direction, here's how I play my part in that, that progress, it gets a little bit easier. And honestly, when you're not making the progress and you run into the speed bumps, it makes that a little bit easier as well, because there's a team to rely on, which is, you know, the joke about the long walks on the beach. That's part of a very, like, that was a tough life lesson for me. It might surprise you to hear that I'm a little bit of a type A personality. And so one of the hardest things that I find myself doing is asking for help. And there's this great company out there, quick little shout out to GoRuck. GoRuck is an organization that not only makes, like, some of the best backpacks on the planet, but they do these events, right? And these events are meant to be this endurance event, and they're run by ex-special forces operators.
What?
Right? So just imagine, like, intentionally paying money to have a former Navy SEAL yell at you for 12 hours. And so I did this, and kind of in the middle of the night, my body kind of quit. My body was done. And you know, the rule is you wear a rucksack, it's got 35 pounds in it, and you're not allowed to take it off. And I was doing this stupid exercise, and I'm literally laying down in the street, just contemplating, again, all those questionable life decisions that have gotten me here. And the cadre, the guy in charge, comes over to me, and he says, man, I've got some bad news for you. And I'm just thinking, what worse news could you have for me in this moment of my life? And he says, you know, you can't quit. You're not allowed to quit. And he says, so I'm gonna leave you here for a few minutes. You organize your thoughts, and I'll come back and check on you in a little bit. So just that process of him walking away, it gets you thinking, right? Why am I doing this? Really, why am I here? Why am I putting myself through this? What's going on? And he comes over, and he's like, all right, you know, quick assessment. What what are you physically capable of right now? And me being the smart aleck that I am, I was like, I'm physically capable of sitting here. And he says, that's great. If you can sit there, then you can be carried. And he said, so what we're going to do is we're going to give someone else your rucksack, and we're going to carry you to the next area that we're going to be in. And you're going to sit there and you're going to watch us. And then we're going to carry you to the one after that. We're going to carry you the rest of the night, but you're not going home. And that lesson just stuck with me. And of course, you know, me being type A macho guy, I was like, I'm not getting carried. I got up and, you know, put my rucksack on. It was right after. And I think that's the thing is, when you're managing a team that has the amount of things on its plate that all security organizations do, number one, you, as a leader, you need to understand when people are taking that knee, and you need to be able to check in with them and do that assessment of, okay, what are you capable of accomplishing right now? And then kind of regardless of their answer, be able to show that you're there to support them and that you can get them to the finish line regardless of what their contribution is.
I love that. I think that's such a great note to end on, although I will also add that clearly that dude was one smart cookie and he knew exactly how to play you from the beginning.
He may have done it once or twice before.
But yeah, I think that is a perfect note to end on. We always love the power of teamwork message. All right, cool. Thank you, Richard, so much. This was such a great conversation. I feel like we could have gone on for a really long time. I barely let Todd get a word in edgeways, although that's pretty much my standard MO, let's face it.
I'll tell you what, if I'm around in another year, let's do another one.
Yes, for sure. And yeah, and then there'll be cake, right? Right. Trying to think the cake is a lie. I had to get it in there. Come on now. Yeah. All right. So yeah, thank you so much. It just leaves me to say thank you to Todd for educating me in the rapid rundown and having the forbearance for me not letting him get a word in edgeways. And thank you as ever to our amazing producer, Bree, who is the person who really does all the work. Okay, we will catch you next episode. Thank you.